Welcome, Dr. Finkelstein. How are you?
I'm great, Ian. Thank you. How are you?
I'm excellent. I've noticed that you've talked a lot about what you call the Big Eight chronic conditions. That includes chronic pain and fatigue and digestive tract issues, vascular diseases like heart and circulatory issues, obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, respiratory problems like asthma and allergies and COPD, mood disturbances, immune system disorders, and of course the big and scary one, cancer, and that you note that there is a common culprit in these disorders, and that is what, sir?
Inflammation.
Inflammation.
And the inflammation that I'm speaking of is this, you know, this active process of molecules circulating through your bloodstream and through your tissues that is causing unnecessary destruction of tissue, is sapping some of your energy, and it's allowing for you to be more vulnerable to things that you may otherwise really want to prevent, like infections, immune disorders, and cancer, as you said.
Well, let's talk today about what we can do about this, and let's start right away. Is there something that we can avoid, let's say, for example, in terms of what we eat, to start avoiding inflammation? So can we live an anti-inflammatory life and start with our diet?
Well, again, let me put this in context, too, because I think most people listening to a podcast like this may be wondering if they haven't heard some of the other podcasts we've done. Well, isn't there a medical treatment for inflammation? I mean, aspirin, Advil, you know, I can take that, right? And the answer is yes, in part, you can. But the idea here is that this is, when there are chronic conditions, you can't necessarily take this stuff all the time. And even if you could, it's not completely adequate. This is the real point that I want to drive. When I was practicing medicine, I did all of that. And people were still coming back with one or the other. You know, people can have more than one of these. So even if people on anti-inflammatory medications were getting some of these things at alarming rates, it forced me in good conscience to ask myself, is there something else going on here? Is it not just this drug going to be useful? Is there some other way that I can help? And this is when it gets to your current question, which is, yeah, I mean, sometimes you go to your doctor, you get some of these things assessed, and you, in general, you should follow their advice, but you should also understand that there's so much you can do, and that's when it gets into how you take care of yourself. And so you start off with maybe the most obvious and common question is, well, is what I'm eating have anything to do with this? And the answer is absolutely yes. Foods can be put into a number of different types of categories, you know, fat, protein, carbohydrates, good foods, bad foods, you name it. There's all sorts of different categorizations. But for this conversation, I like people to think about putting foods into two categories. One is inflammatory, and the other is anti-inflammatory. And if we had a discussion, which I think we should, on what is what and what do you need to know, this is really important because it can help you then make better decisions as far as what do you put in your mouth.
Right. So what is an anti-inflammatory food?
Well, in general, I mean, and so the good news in all of this is the answer is really simple. In general, whole fruits and vegetables are anti-inflammatory. And in general, animal products and processed foods are inflammatory. So there are subsets like if you eat too much sugary, you know, fruits, well, enough sugar is inflammatory. So you can't just subsist on apples and expect that you're going to be healthy anyway. Nobody, I think, would make that assumption. But, you know, you can't go to extremes with any of the individual components of your diet. Like, you can't just eat broccoli, even though that's probably one of the best anti-inflammatory foods out there. By itself is not going to make you a healthy person. So you need a well-balanced diet. But I'm talking about whole, fresh, seasonal fruits and vegetables is the ideal way to go, and vegetables more than fruit. And that's anti-inflammatory.
What's happening inside the body in terms of the metabolizing of this food that's causing the actual inflammation?
Well, so this again gets into the discussion of, like, bad foods, the way that they were labeled, you know, in the 70s and 80s. And it started off with fat, right? So it started off with the idea that saturated fats found in red meat seem to be inflammatory, and indeed they are. I don't want to bore people with the details, but you can easily find them. You look at a chart of the inflammatory cascade, it's called. And the word cascade is interesting because it's one leads to the other, leads to the other, leads to the other, like a domino effect. And the inflammatory cascade would fill the wall of your kitchen. And it would have so much detail on it, all sorts of molecules and enzymes and vitamins and minerals. I mean, it would make you nauseated, frankly. So, in fact, maybe you should put it in your kitchen so you don't eat so much. But the fact of the matter is there's a lot of beautiful things to see on that chart because when it's working well, it's in a state of great balance. But the thing here is that when you eat a food that's inflammatory, it tips the scales. It sort of gets, you know, sort of activated in one area of that chart and produces more of the damaging molecules that then circulate in the blood or create the movement of things like white blood cells or other transmitters and hormones that in balance, in the end, are there to produce fluid, to increase blood flow in a sort of a negative way as if something is damaged and repair it. And in excess, when the balance is tipped, this causes tissue destruction. And so the first and bad food was saturated fat, and that's why people often say, my diet is great, I don't eat red meat. And that's a sort of a outcome of that advice. But we now know, because 30 years has passed, that there's more to it than red meat. It seems that there are a lot of pro-inflammatory molecules, not just fats. Even excess protein can be inflammatory, or excess foods that are acidic in properties. And there are toxins that are in our environment which are inflammatory, and these are often in the food we eat. So, and as I said, you can have too much sugar, even in the form of a whole fruit, and that gets involved in this inflammatory cascade and tips the balance to more inflammation and ultimately more destruction. And as we talked about in another podcast, even the elevation of risks for diseases like cancer, Alzheimer's disease, mood disorders, in addition to the things that maybe most people think of in terms of arthritis, back pain, chronic pain of other sorts. It drains your energy when you're inflamed. I mean, essentially, just think about it. Inflammation is marked in general when we see it by two things. One is redness, meaning blood flowing to an area, and the other is swelling. Those are the two consequences, at least, that we can see through our skin, like when we, you know, sort of bang our knuckle against the wall or something. So
right.
This movement of blood and fluid takes blood from other places that might prefer it, like our digestive tract while we're eating food. So inflammation causes all sorts of other disturbances downstream.
Right. What about movement? Can we make up for a multitude of these sins by getting physical activity?
Absolutely. So the whole idea here then, and I'm so happy you didn't dwell on food, even though I think there's more we can say, but just, and let me just end the food discussion with vegetables, on the other hand, rebalance the process in another direction in addition to fortifying us with minerals and vitamins that are important to keep the system in balance. But the idea is that it's not just food either. There's a lot of other things in our life that are inflammatory or that result in a degree of a type of physical, mental, emotional impairment that adds to the inflammatory flow. And one of them is stagnation. So of any sort. So if your blood is stagnant, obviously, you know, it doesn't circulate well, you have poor circulation, your fingers are cold, your toes are cold, you may not have the right energy if your blood's not circulating properly, your mind may not be alert. So we understand, you know, blood flow and circulation. When our nervous system doesn't flow properly, we have numbness or tingling. Sometimes some of the chronic pain syndromes have to do with nerve flow issues. So the prototypical antidote is restoring movement. That's a classic way of actually characterizing Chinese medicine and its whole approach. People think of it as acupuncture, but what is the needle? What are the needles doing when people stick, you know, when a Chinese practitioner puts them in your body? They're trying to open up a dam that, in their way of thinking about it, is clogged, the dam of energy as it flows through the body. And so we can restore movement in a lot of ways. The number one simplest way is get off the couch.
Right. You're always asking the question, are you taking care of yourself? And one of the main ways of doing that is staying hydrated and getting enough sleep. That presumably would help with inflammation too, correct?
Right, again, so here's the whole thing. It's all about balance. And so anything that tips your balance makes you feel tired. Let's say you're tired because you don't sleep well at night. Well, you're tired because your brain's tired, your body, your back, your muscles are tired, but so are all the cells of your body. Every single cell of your body is tired, and in the cells of your body are these machines that operate to, you know, take in nutrients, to expel waste, to build new molecules, to sort of get your immune system, you know, in good shape, and your inflammatory system in good shape. Well, if they're tired, then neither of those last two things wind up in their ideal condition. So how you feel in the morning, you should assume, is how your cells feel. And how your cells feel is whether or not you're going to be ready for the day and the virus that you're going to touch on the subway, or the parasite that's going to be in the food you eat. So you want to be in better shape for those. And the way to be in better shape is to be well-rested, because that means all your cells are well-rested.
Okay. Now, let's talk about something really interesting. Let's talk about the so-called exogenous things, or the things that are outside your body. Can that affect inflammation inside your body?
Yeah, I mean, so this is all part of what I would call the inflammatory or anti-inflammatory lifestyle. So in addition to, you know, what we put in our bodies in terms of food and water, which you mentioned, we put other things into our bodies, like noise. We can be standing next to a jackhammer. How does that feel to you? I feel for the guys in general, some women who are on those jobs, but that's difficult. I would predict that all of them come home feeling pretty achy and sore.
Right.
Not to mention how they feel inside in terms of the jumpiness. But there's all sorts of other noise out there. So there's chronic sort of ambient noise that's noxious. It could be traffic out your window or sirens, but it could be, you know, I'll label it bad music. But what I mean by that is music that is aggravating or the lyrics are upsetting. Similarly, we could put news media in our body. We could read stories that are horrific. We can do that especially at night, which many people do on the 11 o'clock news, and try to then go to sleep soundly and peacefully after that. Good luck. These are the things that we do. We don't even think about how they affect us, but we know they do once you hear about it. And we have then some access, maybe an opportunity to sort of reorganize a little bit. But there's a lot of noise out there. Then there are the conversations we have with people. There are some people who really just tick us off. And so, you know, some of that we're obligated to do. They may be the people we work with or people who live in our house. But there are some things that are elective, like making a phone call to your mother-in-law at 10 o'clock at night may not be what you want to do. And I say that tongue-in-cheek. I mean, I love mother-in-laws in general, but I'm using that because it's so classically identified with an aggravating conversation. But there are many other people who are aggravating. And to the extent that we could choose when and where we engage in those sorts of conversations, we'd be wiser.
Right. So things like gastrointestinal challenges or skin problems or other kinds of inflammatory conditions can manifest themselves physically, even though they start mentally or psychologically.
Yeah, and there's now more data every day on the association between the mental-emotional state, things like noise and aggravation, stress, if you will, but that's a pretty generalized term. But here I'm trying to be specific about it. What kind of stress are we talking about? Well, we're talking about, you know, difficult people and loud noise and obnoxious, you know, sort of talking heads that are, you know, trying to, you know, get a rise out of us, and they do, of course, and they're entertaining, but they're inflammatory. They're inflammatory. Look at their faces. They're red. Okay, our face sometimes gets red when we're aggravated. This is a sign of inflammation, as I mentioned earlier. So we just, you know, and Ian, this whole subject is so important to me because it's so central to my general approach to what I call skillful living, which is to just try to get bring, you know, deeper awareness into how all of your life connects, all these dots connect, and try to be a little wiser in how you sort of approach your day. But when we're specifically talking about inflammation, this is where it sort of all of that comes into play visibly in our bodies. And so, yes, it may be dermatitis and a skin reaction, or it may be headaches, or it may be our stomach. We certainly know, in our own experience, everyone has it. When we're upset, we can, you know, our stomach doesn't feel so good. So
right.
That's
well,
clear
kind
evidence. That's a clear evidence of the mind-body connection.
Right. We've always had an intuitive understanding of that. We say to each other, you know, calm down, you're going to give yourself a heart attack. We've always known that. The big question is, what can we do about that to stop that cycle? We can clearly make a decision not to call the person that aggravates us or inflames us at 11 o'clock at night. We can turn off the news when it's very disturbing before we're trying to go to sleep. But when we are forced to work with the people with whom we have to work, when we're forced to do the kind of jobs we have to do, what can we do for ourselves to stop that manifestation? So in other words, what can we do proactively, a kind of prescription, if you will, for an anti-inflammatory life when we have to still live the lives we have to do? What can we do to calm ourselves or relieve that stress? What can we do proactively?
Well, there's two things. One is just remembering this statement. You do not need to be perfect. In other words, there's no way to manage all of this so that you're living in peace and tranquility 24/7.
Right.
You know, that expectation is inflammatory, frankly. When people are perfectionists, when they drive to get everything done and they tend toward neurosis, obsessive compulsive, that's an inflammatory state. So in my advice, you know, I want to preface it with this sort of suggestion, which is that you move in this direction, but don't get preoccupied and neurotic. Do everything possible not to, so that you can truly be in a state of tranquility. So it gets to the second point, which is that some of the stuff you just have to accept, and you have to learn to accept. It is what it is. It's not necessarily going to go away. Sometimes your boss is your boss, and that's, you know, you need that job. You can't just change it. You're in a household with your kids and with your, you know, spouse, and that's not always so easy. Your puppy just, you know, crapped on the floor. I mean, that's just the way it is. So how do you do that? That's your question. I think it's a great question. The prototypical answer is learn to breathe. It's basically, you know, whether we call it meditation or an abdominal breath or relaxation response, the idea is to practice a technique where breathing is central, and that you're learning to just release tension, exhale, breathe deeply to circulate good air, and find a way, usually, to use quiet your mind at the same time, to sort of, through the breath, to settle down. Anyone who can pick up that practice will do themselves the greatest favor possible. It will allow a lot of other things to happen because it will immediately reduce the amount of tension that you're experiencing and provide the clarity and even some of the motivation and energy you need to take these steps toward and movement toward the ideas that we've been discussing.
Right. You know, pain is inevitable. Stuff happens. But suffering is optional. That's a state of mind that one needs to find some way of dealing with through self-hypnosis or therapy or deep breathing or a loving spouse.
Right.
And continuing to work with Dr. Finkelstein is a wonderful way of doing it. So we greatly appreciate your time today. Thank you so much, and we'll see you on the next podcast.
No, well, Ian, you said something so valuable. I've got to stop you.
Right.
The tape rolling. Here's what I think. You said suffering is optional. That leads to a whole other conversation, and so my suggestion is we'll make another podcast on this subject as well, which is how do you, even in the situation of a disease or something so difficult, how do you find meaning in any of those challenges? Because when you do, that is a whole other way to palliate the experience.
That's right.
And when suffering has meaning, or when pain has meaning, I'm sorry, it's no longer really suffering.
That's right.
So that's how you do it. So let's talk about that another time. Please put that on your list.
Indeed. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Have a great day, Ian.
You too.